Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. Real Talk is the show that explores questions large and small. Seems like there aren't any small ones these days, but I am privileged to have with me a revisit from Molly Matter. She is the chair-elect of the Washington State Bar Association Civil Rights Law Section. She was here last time to speak with us about the crisis at the border and how people are treated there. Today, she's going to offer us a check-in on the state of our democracy as it relates to voting, voter suppression, voter rights. Welcome, Molly Matter. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Susan, for this opportunity.
So, I am curious about the state of our democracy, and particularly all the things that have been going on nationally and perhaps in our state that smack of voter suppression. What can you tell us?
Oh, a lot of things. I think we'll start with a little bit of a background, because that's helpful for people. So in 1965, we had the Voting Rights Act. And that was gutted. So from 1965 to 2013, we actually had a law that was a prophylactic measure against voter gerrymandering, voter suppression. So it was very effective. You still needed lawyers, you still needed advocates enforcing it. But what that law did, the Voting Rights Act in Section 5, if you were a state and you had a history of voting rights discrimination, so we're looking generally at the South as well as parts of California, North Dakota, some other Southwest states, you could not change anything related to voting. You can't close a polling place, create a new registration practice, anything that related to voting. You could not do that unless you got pre-clearance from our federal government, which meant you had to show that whatever change you're going to make did not have a discriminatory impact or didn't have a discriminatory intent. So it wasn't racist by design. And then as a result, either one. So you had to show it wasn't racist by design or the impact of that law, the result of it did not disenfranchise or suppress communities of color and communities that had historically been discriminated against.
So it sounds like this was clearly enacted in the time of the civil rights movement, 1965.
Yes. And it's very much the same language of the Civil Rights Act's post-Reconstruction. So the 15th Amendment. So it really carries that forward. I always carry a copy of a small constitution. But so we have, the 15th Amendment, Section 1, the rights of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude, which is slavery.
Slavery, right.
Yeah, so we had this effective, what people have called and what Ruth Ginsburg has said, the most powerful civil rights legislation from 1965 till 2013. So this very recent, 2013, the Supreme Court gutted what is known as preclearance, which means you don't have to show and ask the Department of Justice before you make any change in your if you had a history of discrimination. Those states are no longer covered.
And that was during the Obama administration, was it not?
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court at that time gutted this under Roberts.
And it's I've heard either 14,000 or 15,000 pages of testimony of discriminatory practices. So against all this data, decades of data saying, nope, we still need this coverage. We still need, our protection. I think Ruth Ginsburg had said in the dissent something like, it's like being in a rainstorm and outlawing or taking your umbrella down because you're not getting wet. Or something, or we still need it. It's a bad.
Still need the umbrella,
right? So so for some people, aren't getting wet, like white people, like you and I. In this democracy, our rights are more protected.
Mm-hmm.
And so for people of color in the South, you know, we still need those umbrellas. We still need protection.
So was this sort of a fantasy of the fantasy idea of post-racial America?
Yes. Lovely. Yes. Oh. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's really scary because we're seeing this jurisprudence, this colorblind jurisprudence everywhere. And it's becoming more accepted, unfortunately. This idea that, you know, even I'm involved in some litigation right now in California with two different groups, civil legal aid groups, and we're defending the California Voting Rights Act that is being attacked funded by a man named Edward Blum, who was the same man that funded the gutting of the Federal Voting Rights Act in 2013. And he's sort of famous for funding, taking down civil rights legislation. So, and this theory is that we want to aspire to a world where we don't see color. So, you know, we shouldn't have civil rights legislation because then it categorizes people, you know? And so it's very, strategic,
mm-hmm.
because judges that have not done their own deconstruction of what it means to exist as a white person living within a white supremacist culture
mm-hmm.
buy into it. They say, sure, that's what we want. We want a colorblind world, right? So it's very,
it's very superficial. And it shocked me that the Supreme mm-hmm. Court fell for that. Mm-hmm. And how can one person, Mr. Blum, fund something that the mm-hmm. Supreme Court eventually takes action on? Presumably there was a campaign prior to that?
Well, there's a lot of, I mean, the Republican Party has been very, very strategic. And, you know, they're always looking decades ahead, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we have some people in the progressive political side that are also doing that, but they have been far more strategic than progressive folks.
Apparently.
It is what it is.
By gutting civil rights legislation, they're essentially re-institutionalizing institutional racism.
Absolutely.
Let's reconfirm institutional racism.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But it's difficult. So for instance, in order to bring a federal voting rights claim, you need to, so you're in federal court, you need to have standing, which is you have to show that you have a particularized concrete injury. So you've been injured and that it will be redressable. There's causation is the second element. Something caused your injury and then it can be redressable. And so what we're seeing are white people, and this is what this litigation is in California about. There's a white gentleman who, it's nice that I called him a gentleman, actually. I'm being
using the term loosely. Yes.
He's a former mayor of a town.
Uh-huh.
And he, the town switched from at-large election method to by district. Do you know what that means?
Listeners may need a little update.
Yeah. Most of the country is at large. Local elections are at large. That means all of the jurisdiction. So let's say Seattle, mm-hmm. all of Seattle votes for city council.
Okay.
Okay. So, every person votes for those five seats or seven seats or nine seats or mm-hmm. whatever the council is. And so what you end up getting is because of institutionalized racism, classism, and where people live, you end up getting people running from Queen Anne
mm-hmm.
or more voting from more affluent and more white areas. So you break up to make a more representative system. You break up by district, at large into districts. So Beacon Hill is a district. The Central District is a district. Queen Anne is its own district. Fremont is a district. So you know, and then you people within that district, you have to, you vote for a person coming from your neighborhood, coming from your district.
Oh, I see.
Okay. So you have to, in order to even run, you have to be from these multiple, these different districts.
Got it. Okay. So and that creates a more representative council.
Which, I mean, it's a no brainer. This is common sense, right? That you would,
Right.
You know, if you live in that neighborhood, you know that there are no street lights in this. You know that the roads need paving. You know that, you know, whatever the resources of that neighborhood need, you're more connected to that and you're more accessible to your constituents. So this gentleman from California decides, because the city has changed from at large to by district, which is a good thing.
Yes.
Most people would agree. That is an injury. He says, I'm injured. I'm injured because my voting rights. Yes. Because I can't no longer vote for 5 or 7 council members. I only get a vote for one.
Oh.
And the Ninth Circuit just recently actually said, yes,
this
we are going to say that's an injury. So it's, again, it's this, this lack of understanding our own history and the real institutional racism that is a part of our everyday lives.
Yes.
You know, so it's, yeah, it's very, it's a challenging time when something like that is reaching a high court and people aren't just interrogating it. You know, doing what you need to do as a judge, really critically interrogate something.
And they are?
No, I mean, they're not, you know, they're not they're not looking at how is that person injured?
What's the real injury?
Right, because, because, you know, that's how our federal government works.
Yeah.
I vote within my district. I'm not mad because I'm not voting in Yakima or wherever, right?
We
set up a system
for the people who represent us.
So it's irrational and illogical, but yet these higher courts are saying this is okay. This is okay.
So let's go back to the 2013 Supreme Court decision to strike down the civil rights law that that was against voter suppression.
Mm-hmm.
Since 2013, then, what's happened?
A rash of voter suppression laws, voter IDs, closing of polling places. North Carolina, we had, who has a long history, state has a very long history of discriminating against African Americans and people of color. We had actually a consent decree that said, because of your history of discrimination, you need to put these things in place. So you need to put early voting in place, because it will allow people to vote more accessibly, right? Not everybody can take a day off of work and vote during those 3 hours or whatever. You know, these are polling sites.
Mm-hmm.
They also said same-day registration is possible. But after 2013 and the federal voting rights was gutted, they rolled back all of these excellent laws that were actually getting more people to the polls. And what was interesting is that it went up to the federal court of appeals, and they found that the Republican lawmakers actually asked for racial data when they drafted a bill that before they drafted a bill that would take away early voting, take away same-day registration and weekend polling sites, they looked at the racial data.
Were these the federal lawmakers?
Or no,
were
this
they
is
North Carolina.
North Carolina, yeah.
Republican
lawmakers said, you know, so they, it was very intentional. Okay, we have more African-Americans showing up at this time. Let's make sure we don't allow access. So, and it's very subtle, and that's the thing, I mean, as racism is, right? It's very nuanced and subtle, and it becomes more and more and more sophisticated. And so one thing like Carolina is getting away with, you know, so anyhow, it went to the courts, and the courts luckily said, you know, thought carefully about it and said, no, you can't roll back those measures. They need to stay on because they were discriminatory. Your purpose was to discriminate against African Americans. And so then they say, okay, well, then the polling sites need to be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day. And so they're putting in, so what that actually resulted in, though, is that people couldn't work polling sites from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Some people didn't. Mm-hmm. Couldn't, you know, they could have hours, you know, what, I don't know if it was funding or volunteer or what, but it essentially creating that new standard that all polling places needed to be open for an entire day, that reduced polling sites by 20%.
Oh, and
right.
Let so me guess subtle, where they were.
Exactly. Yeah. Right?
So low income African-American neighborhood.
And outside district. In places where, and that's where you see around the country, you know, polling sites are closing in places that are very inaccessible, or they're closing in rural places that would make getting to a polling site very difficult for people. I wanted to emphasize the subtlety of that, you know, because from appearance it looks neutral, right? Oh, even maybe affirming.
Right.
Oh, we want polling places open to be later. Open late. But what that actually results in is people or funding or people saying, I can't actually have it then because I can only have my polling site open from, you know, noon to 7.
You are listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and I am here with attorney Molly Matter talking about voting rights, voter suppression, and voter legislation. We can do this thanks to the generosity of Windermere Vashon Real Estate for their support. They make our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. Find them on the web at windermerevashon.com. So Molly, let's look at other examples of this subtle voter suppression.
Yeah, or not so subtle.
Not so subtle,
yes.
Yeah.
We had, well, here in our state, so this is very interesting.
Yeah, let's look at that.
You know, I think we mostly think, and a lot of funding also, like big funders that are interested in civic engagement and a democracy, don't particularly look at Washington as a place that has high voter suppression. But that's when they're looking at west of the mountains, right?
Oh.
Or the I-5 corridor. Mm-hmm. Even though we have definitely voter suppression up in Skagit, we see in eastern Washington, because of the economy of farm workers and the way it's been set up, and we have strong, strong Republican bases that are we want to maintain property.
On the east side of the mountain.
Right, property and wealth and power. And and yet, you know, communities that have lived for decades and decades, providing the labor and doing work in Eastern Washington, that are not representative or represented in local government. And so in Wapato City, which is right inside Yakima County, mm-hmm. it's the poorest city in the state. It's right next to the Yakima Indian Reservation. There was a progressive Latino mayor running for office, and he mobilized the Latino or Latinx, that's the more correct Latinx, okay. Inclusive, not just male,
right?
Pronoun, the Latinx community. He mobilized farm workers. He had a great campaign of volunteers, people that had been teachers for decades in the schools, business owners. Everyone was a lot of people were supportive of him. And he and voter turnout increased by 30%, which is huge.
Wow. That's
incredible. Non-presidential year. This is 2017.
Yeah.
So people came out and they voted. And what happened was the county auditor or county elections office began to flag voters by saying that their signatures didn't match. So the signature on the registration form, this is what they perceived, did not match the signature on their ballot. But what was interesting is that the majority of people that they were flagging were voting for this progressive Latino labor organizer.
Really?
And if you had a Spanish surname, you're 4.5 times more likely to have your ballot flagged.
Wow.
So I became aware of this issue through a different organization that knew that I, you know, did this work, and reached out to some folks that I know, and we got together and began documenting what was going on, and we brought that and to the Secretary of State's office and contacted the Attorney General's office and continued to pressure them to review what was going on. So what would happen is if somebody's ballot was flagged, if you'd voted, you would receive something in the mail that says your signature doesn't match. Please fill out this form and turn it in. So people did.
So did that validate their votes?
No.
No.
So what it did is it brought the form. So people brought in person. They went to the elections office to make sure that their vote counted. And the elections office, which was against RCWs, against our state law, instead of clearing it right then, said, you need to go before the canvassing review board, this body. So the body was the county auditor, the county prosecutor, and the chair of the county commissioner. And they all are Anglo men, white men, and they all happen to be Republican. And they reviewed these ballots one by one. And so I went to the canvassing review board with some community members and saw firsthand through my eyes, these signatures looked the same or same enough. Because, right, when we register to vote when we're 18 and then we're voting again when we're 40 or whatever, you know, yeah, the signatures naturally change.
They change.
That's part of just
and you might be
develop, right,
moving a little faster when you're signing your ballot.
Yes. I mean, signatures, but you could see the A is the same A. The J is the same J. You know, Yolanda Juarez is Yolanda Juarez. And when I saw that and saw them one by one reject ballot after ballot, that's when I began actually documenting and contacting the Secretary of State. Sorry, backing up a bit. So we got the Secretary of State to actually finally come and make these elected officials review the ballots, and when they were in the room and when they were filming or audio recording, they changed their tune. And certain, not everybody, but enough people were allowed to vote, which is just insane.
Oh my God.
That it changed the mayoral election, and the progressive Latino mayor won by just a few votes.
Interesting.
Right.
By just a few votes.
Right.
After a 30% increase in voter turnout.
So, you know, that, you know, part of my work in Washington is now like following up with the Secretary of State and saying, what trainings have you done? Mm-hmm. This really happened. These people were discriminated against. This is, and there's two things that we could say. Okay, did they not know how to vote? And if that is the case, then there needs to be a lot of voter outreach and voter mm-hmm. education mm-hmm. if we're going to play that card. Or was someone intentionally discriminating against these particular voters? Again, you know, we need education on the elections office. We need to make sure they are culturally competent to know what a Spanish surname looks like, right? There's hyphens. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't use both of your last names, or, you know, like Juarez Gonzalez, you know, because you have the mother's last name and the father's last name typically. So, you know, is there some training that people need to go through? What do we need? What needs to happen next so this would never happen again?
And here's my stupid question. No. Were these mail-in ballots? Is the entire state doing
mm-hmm.
mail-in ballots?
Mm-hmm. These were mail-in.
So they were mail-in.
Mm-hmm. So they were, yeah, viewed by election staff and found to be mismatched. But what we see on a national scale, so this is what happened in Washington State. Mm-hmm. And it's real, and it's voter suppression. And there's still, I know several people in that community that have said they won't vote again because of what happened.
Yeah.
You know, I just got data from the elections office that shows that there is, in fact, a decrease of voter turnout this year in that city. So then you look at what happened in Georgia this last year in 2018. And that they actually created a law. This is when Stacey Abrams is running.
Yes.
Right? So they created a law called Exact Match, which is exactly what WAPATO was doing. If you didn't, they would flag signatures for missing hyphens, accent marks, or even middle initials.
Wow.
And then require those people to find the deputy registrar, which is, I guess, one individual in the county that they would have to prove their identity to, that they would have to, whatever, take a day off work, figure out who this person is, go with their birth certificate or driver's license or whatever, and their ballot or their, you know, registration. So this incredibly burdensome.
And were they delaying the final count while these mm-hmm. people were going through this process?
This was prior to the election. They created the law. And it took 50,000 voters immediately. It stalled their registration when they put this exact match law in. And it said 670,000 registrations were canceled in 2017 alone on similar sort of, you know, strategies.
In the state of Georgia.
In the state of Georgia, right. And there's,
So is there any data as to whether those were primarily people of color or low income?
Yes. Yeah. Mostly all black voters.
Wow.
50,000 all black voters were.
Right. This is happening in the United States mm-hmm. of America in mm-hmm. the 21st century, where mm-hmm. we are supposed to be experimenting mm-hmm. with the great experiment of democracy. In a pluralistic society, which is a huge experiment, mm-hmm. but
mm-hmm. it's so dirty, is what it is.
Yeah,
right. I mean, it's obviously saying I'm not going to win. I think Arundhati Roy says something like, "Let's race, but let me, you know, break your knees before we race." You know, it's that
yeah.
right. We're gonna it's an even playing field. You know, the track is, you know, it's a mile long.
Uh huh. But you don't get legs.
You don't get legs for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I
found these statistics that I talked to you about before what we're talking about is a very carefully strategized strategy
mm-hmm.
for primarily the Republicans, white males who want to stay in power and make sure that they're elected officials are their elected officials and that they continue to win their seats. So hence voter suppression. Mm-hmm. What I learned on Radiolab on NPR this weekend speaks to our electorate as well. They put in the World Values Report, they put this question to Americans. The question was, who prefers a strong ruler who doesn't have to bother with Congress? In 1995, 24% of Americans endorsed that idea. That's 1/4, which is a lot. 2018, 32%, 1/3 of Americans said that they prefer a strong ruler who doesn't have to bother with Congress. Democracy is apparently too messy for those people.
Mm-hmm.
Another question put to Americans was, how important is living in a democracy in your choice of places to live? In the 1930s and 40s, 2/3 of Americans said it was important that they live in a democracy. In the 1980s, which is 30 years ago, only 1/3 said it was important. Who knows mm-hmm. what the answer is now? Another question was, is military rule a good system of government? 20 years ago, 1 in 16 Americans said yes, that military rule is a good idea. 2 years ago, 1 in 6 Americans were for military rule. And among young and affluent Americans, 1 in 3.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
does that say people no longer want to participate in a democracy? Does that say that they may feel that mm-hmm. their vote is not
mm-hmm.
valid, doesn't count, isn't worth anything? Does that say we're already living in a government where
mm-hmm.
the leader doesn't mm-hmm. have to deal with Congress?
Mm-hmm. Well, it'd be interesting to know who was actually polled, but I think what it definitely yes. says is we got work to do.
Yeah, we do.
I mean, I want to share something before we end.
One minute.
Something hopeful.
Good.
So we have something that did pass. We have legislation that passed in Washington State this year called the Native American Voting Rights Act. And what we saw last year, when North Dakota actually banned people from voting, said you can only register to vote if you have a physical address. You can't have a P.O. box.
Mm-hmm.
So what that did was disenfranchise Native people, tribal members in the county, in the state. So what we did in Washington State here, not me, but I supported it, was pass legislation where if you're a tribal member, you don't need a residential place. You can have a building on the reservation that you can receive your ballot. It also put polling drop boxes on the ballot. Drop boxes on the reservation, which we've never had before.
Ah.
We have two here on Vashon, but there's none on the Yakima Reservation that has 11,000 people. And you can use your tribal ID to register to vote, which is huge because a lot of people don't have driver's license.
Right.
So we've done something good this year in Washington State.
It's a start. Molly Matter, your name is so perfect for what matters. Thanks for joining us here on Real Talk and giving us a little dipstick into our democracy. And thank you all for listening.